Full of Sound and Fury is a podcast for adults, by adults, containing adult language. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey.
I can hear you and we're recording.
Awesome. Sweet.
That all took. Okay, what were we saying before we realized we couldn't actually hear things?
I mean, I guess I was remarking on the game that just happened and how I thought it was a little ugly because there were a lot of fouls on both sides. And while the Pacers demonstrated that they have great talent and that they played a hell of a basketball game, I still didn't like just constant interruptions for fouls. It was just like that old school East Coast hunker down defense basketball that sometimes gets really physical.
Pseudo WrestleMania.
Yeah, it's just not, that part is not entertaining to me. It's just constant. Every 5 minutes is a foul, you know, or less.
Yeah, I actually bailed out with after LeBron went out with that last tic-tac foul.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it was pretty much over.
Well, it turned into a review fest also.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just constant interruptions. It's like you can't even get a play down before somebody's hacking somebody else. So, you know, from that perspective, it wasn't that great of a game as far as I'm concerned, but the Pacers definitely played really, really well, especially down the stretch. That was some clutch basketball. So it's even now. It's anybody's series, I guess.
Yeah. I have to say, I did not foresee that happening either. I totally got both these conference finals completely wrong.
Yeah, I thought the Spurs were going to have a little bit of a harder time with Memphis, but they just plowed right through those guys.
Yeah, I think plow is actually the operative term there. they just kind of hitched themselves to Tony Parker, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
And in retrospect, I'm trying to figure out why I didn't see that. Memphis' backcourt doesn't have anyone that really scares you.
True.
And against San Antonio, that's a problem. At least with Parker flirting with 40 points every damn night.
Yeah, I guess I'm not too familiar with the entire Spurs lineup, but what I've seen, I think it's kind of indicative that they can play small ball and Memphis can't really keep up. So that probably helped them a whole hell of a lot. So
yeah.
They get a long break because I think this Indiana-Miami series is going to go for a little while longer. Quite a while, actually.
It does have the look of a 12-round boxing match.
Yeah, although, you know, the Heat in Game 3 pulled a blowout out of there. So who knows what's going to happen next time.
Very good.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I don't know. I guess we're back in Miami in a couple of days for Game 5. We'll see what happens.
Pivotal Game 5, as they say.
Yeah, I guess.
So how many turn ankles did you count? Did you count? I think I saw 3.
Yeah, there was LeBron and Chris Bosh at minimum. And maybe a third one that I can't remember. So everybody was twisting their ankle. Everybody was flopping all over the place.
I know. Like
you know, the people on TNT cannot stop talking about all the flopping. It's like, well, I mean, it's the same discussion in soccer all the time too, but no one's changing anything. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's like you have watched basketball before, right?
Yeah, it's just
it's what you do now.
And I mean, they're trying to adjust the rules for to cut down on the flopping, but I mean, some stuff is just going to be, you know, an acting that's you're not going to be able to get around or be able to detect the difference between somebody acting and somebody actually falling down. So like Shane Battier was pulling off some Oscar-level moves tonight on that front. But the guy's really good at it. You know, he hooks him in the right way with his arm here or there subtly, and then they look like they push him down. And they did push him, but it's because he was already attached to them. Like, I don't know what, but, you know, he's just really good at drawing that foul. Are you going to blame the guy? Well, it's not the – everybody calls it shady. I can kind of agree with that, but – he's getting away with it. None of the Pacers are getting away with it.
Oh, yeah. Listen, that's a case of you hate the game, not the player. Like, they got to police that shit better.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm done hating on the guys that are good at it, and they do it because they give them the fouls.
Yeah. But, I mean, even with all the fouls tonight, it didn't make much of a difference. The Heat just weren't getting any buckets after a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess I'll just ask it plainly, and you know, you being a Heat fan, see where you're at on this. What's wrong with D-Wade?
Oh, well, I think his injuries are definitely a part of it. His knee, I forget if it's his right or his left.
Yeah.
They're definitely hobbling. The guy's playing with some pain. It's pretty obvious in certain steps. I think, you know, ever since last year and the year before, he's also been the guy that's, you know, wants to take a back seat to let LeBron do his thing. And I don't know if that's getting to him again this year. You know, they were gelling like you could not believe during the regular season, game after game after game, win after win after win. So, I mean, I don't want to start picking it apart too much, but
yeah.
Dwayne Wade looks like he's lost a little bit of his little gas in this playoff series, and a little bit in the last one too.
Yeah, there's no question. I think it's the source of that is what I would be worried about if I'm a Heat fan.
Yeah,
Key and I watched a part of Game 4 tonight at Pluckers, and he was pretty convinced it was old man limp.
I mean, there's some of that with the injuries. I mean, Wade's had quite a few injuries over time. I'm not sure about the psychological situation. There aren't really a lot of indicators that show he's like not trying, other than maybe he's hurt and so he's not as quick to the bucket and that sort of thing. But no one was getting to the damn bucket tonight. Everybody and their mom was trying to take three pointers the whole game. Like Chalmers was the only guy that was getting into the freaking bucket.
That was driving the basket. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how much that's Indiana's defense, though.
Oh, I mean, no doubt. They definitely were locking things down very, very well. It's just, you know, at a certain point, you just have to start driving anyway and just collecting fouls. Like, you have to take the basketball to the hoop. And LeBron was settling for those three-point shots up until the end when he was starting to make them and they were starting to get a little clutch. Like, in the early parts of the game, it looked like LeBron from 2 years ago where he just didn't have that dominance. And they were racking up fouls, and that was, you know, throwing everybody off. It was, you know, on the Heat side, things were pretty messy tonight.
Yeah. You know, I didn't see much of the first half. I thought he played pretty well when I saw him in the second half. And you know, he got that look that he often gets that we all know really well at this point, where he just kind of like, no, fuck you guys, we're winning this game anyway.
Yeah, and then his decision tonight was shoot more three pointers and outside shots than drive to the basket. He wasn't getting a lot of success in the post, which is what he's been focusing on. So, you know, he got a few buckets that way, but he was really getting, you know, locked up tight by Hibbert. And, you know, the rest is history. It's just I hope they find an answer for all that stuff next game.
Yeah.
As a fan.
Oh, yeah. But well, I don't think you can be too worried. We are just, what, 48 hours removed from 70 points in one half.
Yeah.
Against one of the, you know, statistically great defenses of all time, so...
Yeah, who knows if that kind of luck will show up again. We'll see in Miami. I mean, home court, we'll see what that effect has on the Heat.
Yeah, that's the NBA, though. I mean, I you know, it felt like a foregone conclusion. Miami beats San Antonio here come June, but
yeah, who knows?
Later, it's like, man, this is going to be a goddamn street fight for 6 or 7 games.
And then they're going to come into the finals tired, which is going to have an effect, and the Spurs will be rested. So
yeah,
that also has, you know, is going to be a factor going in, assuming Miami even pulls it out, which, you know, I'm a fan, so I believe in my team. It's just,
It's
an even series right now, so I don't, for all those listening at home, I don't want to start trash talking or anything on the Pacers. Like, it is, you know, even right now, so who knows what will happen.
Yeah, I mean, all that being said, I think they were pretty lucky to get that foul out from LeBron late.
Yeah.
I think they probably go in and just pull that out, and then.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was kind of luck on a couple of different sides. Like, the Heat got lucky. There was that wrong call on the 24-second clock violation. That was actually not a 24-second violation, so the Pacers would have gotten the ball back. And that went the Heat's way instead because all three refs and the person monitoring the clock screwed up. So they went on like a 6-0 rally or something like that late in the game, and that brought them even. And then things started to fall apart again, and LeBron fouled out. So it was like everybody was kind of getting weird calls and weird situations in their favor. It was just a bizarre game, in my opinion, in some aspects like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, in those tight defensive games, that's usually what it comes down to, is the officiating light.
Yeah, and I mean, it's ugly. It's not entertaining basketball in a sense. You know, there aren't that many amazing dunks. There are not a whole lot of good shots. They're just grinding it out, which, fine, you know, that's how you got to win some games. It's just, man, was it exhausting to watch?
Right, and you don't want in the playoffs to have the best player in the NBA not out there.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it was only for the last, whatever, 2 minutes or a minute and a half or whatever it was, but still, you know, and that was the first time he had fouled out in a year, like almost an entire year since the last playoffs was the last time he fouled out of a game.
Yeah, they flashed that stat. It was something crazy, like 100-something games. Is that what I saw?
Yeah, I mean, since the Celtics series from last playoffs, that was the last time he fouled out of a game.
Oh, okay.
So he's got a good stretch.
That's a while ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, and you know, he rarely gets into foul trouble by those statistics, but he was pissed tonight. He was pissed the whole freaking game. You know, what are you going to do?
Well, I think that bodes well for Miami in the long run. A little LeBron rage goes a long way.
Yeah, and you know that no one can say that they breeze through. You know, there's always going to be naysayers no matter what happens. But assuming Miami makes it out of this and into the finals, no one will say, oh well, they had an easy time. No one gave them a challenge. Derrick Rose wasn't healthy on the Bulls, and they just kind of went through uncontested and to meet the Spurs. Like, no, there's a challenge here. If the Heat win, they're going to earn it, and I think that's good from a public relations perspective.
Yeah, I think that's nice for validity, but I don't know. Any team that goes on a 27-game winning streak on en route to a championship, those kind of naysayers, I mean, that just frustrates me. It's just kind of stupid. It's like, really?
Yeah, I mean,
question the greatness of this team.
Yeah, I mean, the shit talkers just don't go away. I mean, and you know, they didn't do themselves any favors by saying, oh, we're not going to win two championships or three or four. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, I hope the statute of limitations, expires soon on that, because you know they're doing great things. They're an amazing team, so let's let them continue to do that without any.
Well, I've always had a problem with that interpretation of that too. He was very careful even when he was saying that fairly audacious line to point out, you know, if we do what we think we can do,
yeah,
this is within the normal possibility. It's not they didn't, you know. This isn't Babe Ruth pointing to the outfield and calling his fucking home run. It was just...
Yeah. Although everybody interpreted it that way, which was sad, I guess.
Everyone was just pissed and felt bad for Cleveland because, well...
Yeah, does everybody still feel bad for Cleveland? Cleveland's still a piece of shit, so... who's crying about that now other than Cleveland?
Well, Cleveland is.
Yeah. Look at Varejao. You should be sad just for the way that guy looks. He's weird.
Andre Vergeau. That's a whole other ugly conversation. Speaking of basketball, I keep hearing that he's a trade asset. I'm like, really? You want this guy play?
I don't know.
I guess that speaks to the league being starved for centers, but
yeah, but everybody plays small and fast nowadays. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Oh, well, here's a hypothetical I wanted to bring up along the lines of, because I don't know that I think Wade is old. He's 32, for God's sakes.
Yeah, true, true.
So I think he's probably just playing through injuries, but
it's an interesting question
if he's not and he has lost a step.
I mean, I just don't see it. I mean, the guy even tonight, the guy pulled off some amazing moves. You know, if he's hurting, maybe he's just not likely to pull off as many as he did in the past.
Yeah.
Plus, you've got LeBron and Bosch there to absorb some of the fancy move juice as well and do their own thing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, everybody was talking about how he was kind of fading last year, but he came back and he was critical in certain games, but he's just trying, I think, to play his role, number one. And two, I really think that knee is bothering the heck out of him. I really do.
Oh, there's no question. He's got the lamp.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if it's one of those things like this is the whole Louis C.K. thing, you know? Is your knee ever going to get better? No, you just do that now.
Yeah, I don't know.
If it's one of those, that's a problem moving forward for this team that really is trying to be one of the all-time dynasty teams.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Who knows what would happen if Wade really did get injured sufficiently where he's just not able to be as productive as he was in the past. Maybe he becomes more of a role player and they have to scale him back. Who knows? You know, I think it's too early to tell. I hope that, you know, he gets some time to heal and that he proves to everyone that he's still got it, because I think he does. The Jews just got to get better. I mean, with, you know, as far as his health is concerned. Yeah. No.
An off season without, you know, the Olympics to worry about might help.
Yeah, how about that?
The man has played, like, he's got a lot of basketball in his legs right now.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. He needs to go see that fucking mad scientist doctor that Kobe goes to. That probably wouldn't hurt. I don't know. It probably would hurt. I don't know what.
I don't know.
About this thing?
I not really.
Apparently what they do is they cook your own blood in order to, like, provoke an immune response, and then they inject that shit back into him.
Oh, that's weird.
Right? That is real mad scientist crap.
Yeah. Well, good luck to him. Isn't that? And the Lakers are not in the playoffs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I seem to recall that he did not finish the season.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He also played a ridiculous number of minutes there late, too.
True. Yeah, he was playing 40, almost 48 minutes a game for a while there towards the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not heartbroken about L.A. being a tire fire. Well, frankly.
Yeah, no one's complaining about that. There isn't a lot of press surrounding the Lakers, you know, subsequent meltdown this season. No one really cares. They can go take a break.
It's just disappointing the Clippers didn't show more in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. That would have been fun.
I think Chris Paul is as well, though.
Yeah. Maybe next year.
Yeah, until Game 7, I was like, there's no way this guy's going to leave L.A. But then he looked pretty pissed in that postgame, so.
Yeah, who knows?
Somewhere Mark Cuban's got an erection. Like, yes, the door is open.
Cuban says he's got some sort of 2 or 3 year plan to make the Mavericks competitive again, doesn't he? He was talking some mess about that.
Yeah, he actually went in depth about the new CBA at last year's Sloan Conference, the 2012 one.
Okay.
I think they were ahead of the curve. The problem is they just haven't hit on a free agent yet.
Yeah.
But if I remember correctly, I think it's 2014 where, like, everybody and their dog becomes available, so.
Mm-hmm. Including LeBron, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh yeah, for sure. LeBron is going to be heading that class, which is why this whole Wade thing becomes kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
If he's fucked up, then he might move on.
Yeah, God, it's going to be an interesting summer.
Yeah, I imagine he's developed a taste for playing with a number two guy that can really go out there and help him out.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. We'll see what the perception is of Dwayne Wade once the season's over. I think that'll be a big thing.
Yeah. I guess as a summarizing thought, we really will have a better feel for it next fall.
Yeah.
How Wade looks after, you know, not having to play every damn day for a year and a half.
Yeah.
So. All right. So moving on to our other topic that has nothing to do with basketball. Fringe ended in January, right?
Yeah, I think January.
Okay, we got a final half season there, season 5.
Mm-hmm.
Has some time to let it sit and percolate. I guess I'm trying to figure out where it sits in the pantheon of television series.
I mean, it's such an oddball show in a way in terms of what it managed to accomplish. It was certainly, you know, hard sci-fi in an era on TV where you don't get a lot of that. And at the same time, the writing and the acting was so good that it brought out a lot of genuine emotion that sci-fi doesn't usually have. I think there's that odd combination there. You know, you watch Star Trek, and as an example, and there's a lot of great adventures, a lot of great stories. Mm-hmm. But the genuine emotion that you get for the characters in Fringe is a little bit different than the kind of involvement and, engagement you get with the characters in Star Trek versus the characters in Fringe. So,
yeah, that's really to Abrams' credit, I would argue, too.
Yeah.
He's done all kinds of genre fiction at this point, or, you know, uh-huh. some directly, some overseeing it, but he never loses sight of that. He really does ground it in the characters.
Yeah, and the actors are just phenomenal, all of them. Anna Torv, you know, just everyone involved, John Noble especially, he plays Walter, that guy just is impressive episode after episode after episode, but the whole cast is just fantastic.
Yeah, I was about to say that the overall plot of the series forced everyone to play multiple iterations of the same person, and they all
pretty
much killed on it.
Oh, yeah. Like, everyone. It was just phenomenal. Phenomenal stuff.
Yeah. Torv in particular, like you said, I want to say back in season 3, I think she played... Let me see if I remember this correct. She played Olivia.
Yeah.
She played Folivia. Then she played Folivia pretending to be Olivia.
Yep.
Then she played Olivia thinking that she was Folivia.
Yep, that's 4.
And then at five we have Olivia being possessed by William Bell.
Yeah, and if you want to count 6, she also played Olivia in the dystopian future when Peter got connected to the machine, which is a separate Olivia from the future, who's like the current Olivia, but you know, has a kid and was like.
I don't remember this episode.
Season. So when Peter goes into the machine and he basically time leaps into the future, and like their Fringe Division is battling the other universe, and then he's got to figure out how to get back to our time. He you know, contacts all the people that are in the future, including Walter and Walternate and Olivia, but since they're from the future, they're all affected by things differently, so they all behave slightly differently. So in a way, it's like yet another version of those characters, because it's like 30 years in the future or something like that. And then they find out that the machine was actually built by Walter and then sent back through time to like ancient times, and that's how they find the machine. They kind of tie everything up itself.
They get that from The Last Samwise, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
Fringe was really interesting that way too. Like Lost, every season had like it added its own feel to it.
True, very true. Yeah.
I think one of the most interesting comments I've seen about the show was Joel Watson from HijinksAndSue.com made this, and I was curious to see what you thought about it. He made the argument that the show kind of reached its end point with season 3. And then 4 and 5 felt tacked on, I guess mostly because it kept getting reprieves that I don't think they really expected to get.
I think the reprieve part is part of it. But, I mean, yeah, I think they did the right thing. They had this story that they wanted to tell about the two universes, and they told it in the space that I think it sort of required, mm-hmm. and that was the three seasons, really 2 and a quarter or whatever, because the first season was a lot of filler that they were just trying to make sure Fox didn't cancel them right from the start. And then like the story took the time it took, and then it was done. But they, you know, got renewed. So they went in this other interesting direction, which, yeah, while it's not part of the same story, and while that two universes battling story is kind of what everybody loves about the show, like what they love, they think most fondly of, I think the whole, you know, Peter coming back story is unique and interesting. And it touches on a lot of different themes that are really interesting. So it's in a way, it sort of like starts to become a little bit like Mad Men in that way. And that's maybe sounds like a stretch, but there's this kind of character study and thematic study that comes in with season 4 about what kind of effect you have on someone when you disappear from reality, that I thought was a really interesting take. That, yeah, it's not the Fringe you used to know, because that Fringe was defined by this war between the universes. Now Fringe is something different. But it was still interesting, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they all work. Season 5, though, really did kind of disappoint me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember you told me that earlier when we were starting to watch it.
Yeah, I just...
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was definitely really when they thought they were done with season 4. Like, they thought that was going to be the end. And then they were at the last minute... renewed for 15 episodes or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really blame Abrams and his showrunners. I mean, to have Fox is sort of canceling Damocles hanging over your head every 3 months. So you're constantly working in like, okay, is this our last episode?
Yeah, I mean, until the last episode of season 4, they didn't know that they were going to get renewed, and then they get renewed, and I imagine they got to kind of rush, you know, some story together. But while there were a few, yeah, definitely kind of mediocre episodes in there, I think overall, like, it was a great kind of homage to all of Fringe when they start tying in all of the different elements and the different creatures and things that now the Fringe people are using against the Observers. I thought that was really cool. And they kind of revisit a bunch of themes, the white tulip theme, you know, kind of motif in a very, you know, couple of different areas, and the time travel stuff. And, you know, you get your fill of who the Observers are and what they're there to do. So overall, yeah, it was, you know, there was definitely some bumps on that season five stuff. But by the end, I was satisfied with how they wrapped it up. Honestly, it was a little bit better, I think, than Lost in terms of, I felt a little kind of hoodwinked with that alternate universe thing in Lost season six. And I didn't feel that way so much with Fringe. I think they kind of wrapped it up pretty succinctly.
The Lost end, rather, has never really bothered me, just because I liked the stories they told with their alternate universe.
Yeah, that's true. I did like them.
Yeah. I mean, the end of it was a little bizarre. And then the whole double suicide thing still, you know, how many years later? I still don't understand. You have a kid.
Yeah, seriously.
No, I guess we're drowning here. All right, let's do this. All right,
sure. And I mean, like, I think Lost had this thing where it was so mysterious all the time that it can kind of invent whatever rules it wanted to justify the story that they were trying to tell. Whereas Fringe had to be sort of self-consistent. And I think at the end of the day, it stayed consistent with what it was showing, right? They used the same tools they showed you at the beginning of season five, the time portals to bring things through. And they didn't have to add extra things to kind of have it all wrap up nicely. Whereas Lost kind of at the last minute pulled out, oh, hey, yeah, this is the dead zone that we all live in, that we all created somehow for our own good until we all got together. Then we can go pass away to heaven or whatever. Like, they didn't explain that until the very end. And they're kind of holding that back to keep you engaged in the suspense. And then bam. And it's like, well, they could have gone a million different ways with this thing. They could have invented any sort of explanation they wanted. And they waited to the last minute to tell you. Whereas I think Fringe kind of kept things going at a pretty good pace, constantly giving you what you wanted to hear as it tries to tell you the story. I think it's just a different, you know, setup, different way of telling the tale. But I felt more satisfied at the end of Fringe, I think. Although I did like the end of Lost, I'm not totally disappointed by it. It was just different.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much my take on it as well. I was fine with it, but I understood why a lot of people were like, what the hell? I knew they were dead.
Yeah, it was a bit strange. But hey, it did, you know, put everything kind of where it needed to be, I guess, to have us all say goodbye on Lost. But Fringe, you know, it was just, I really loved that they brought it all together, and they, like I said, they had all the different, yeah, I guess, and they had all the various Fringe event, you know, artifacts everywhere, and they reused those. I thought that was really cool, and you know,
she also
that
jumps to the parallel universe as part of the plan.
Yep, she did. So they really tied everything together, right? You got to see the parallel universe people one more time and see how they were doing, and see Lincoln again, and, you know, see all that cool stuff.
And Olivia's kids with Lincoln and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and I really loved at the end when Olivia smashes Windmark between the cars or whatever, and I was like, yeah, one last time, powers activate, man. Kill that motherfucker. You know, that was great.
You got a favorite episode?
Of the whole show, man, that's a tough one. I really liked a lot of those alternate universe episodes.
Oh, yeah, season three is awesome. I think my favorite, though, is Marionette from season three. That's the one where it's the first episode where they're dealing with Olivia getting back.
Okay, is that the one with the dude that, like, is piecing back together that girl or something? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
Awesomely thematic, too, right?
Yeah. Just very cool.
Yeah, that one kind of had, getting back to the whole having a little bit of everything from the series, I felt like that episode really kind of hit all the hallmarks. Cool, you know, cool sci-fi detective story, wonderful acting, a lot of character drama, and then, you know, they managed to tie those things really well with the nature of the plot itself.
Mm-hmm.
That one was a standout.
Yeah.
Like you said, season three was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I would say that's where Fringe peaked. I wouldn't, because that was, you know, the climax of that story that they were trying to tell. But I really think that if people give season four a chance, and even season five to that extent, although I admit that I think season five is probably the weakest season. You know, those have great stories in them too, and they're definitely worth watching.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The one that I can't remember very well is number two.
Season two?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's because I remember they started by, like, not having Olivia there because she was in the other universe, and they tried to introduce that other FBI agent, and then she, like, disappeared because I guess she didn't have audience appeal or something. It was really weird. Agent Jessup, I think, was her name. And she was looking at all these Bible connections or whatever to the Fringe cases.
Oh, man, she must not have been appealing because I have no recollection of this character.
Yeah, she was there for like three or four episodes, and then Olivia came back, boom, and then it was over. She was Agent Jessup was gone.
She literally came out with a boom, right? She flew out of the car or some shit?
Yeah. Yeah, that was crazy. And I think, yeah, because that season ended with Olivia being swapped with Folivia, and then...
Yes.
Season three starts with, you know, the whole everybody getting back and the fight starting.
Oh, you know what it is? I remember the arc now. It's Peter discovers he's from the other universe.
Right, yeah.
And the final third focuses on getting him back.
Right.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. And you get to see, like, all those cool, like, comic book homages, like all the green things are red in the other universe.
Right.
Red Lantern, Red Arrow, that sort of thing. That was kind of fun. You know, I think an interesting thing about Fringe, kind of diverging a little bit from talking about the seasons, is, you know, Olivia has superpowers, but the writers have kind of limited her use of those throughout, from season to season to season, to, like, I guess keep things going. Like, it didn't get crazy. It didn't become a superhero show. And in the first season, when they had all the lights turning off stuff and everything, I really thought that she was going to have superpowers that she could use more readily, but they really pulled that back some.
I'm really glad they did.
Yeah, and in retrospect, I think that was a good approach, because otherwise it was going to start to get silly really fast. And they really kind of played around the ideas of her trying to discover just what she could and couldn't do, and how it was a struggle to, like, understand the nature of how those powers get triggered. I thought that was an interesting way of reining things in just enough to keep the certain things mysterious and not just start blowing powers out of proportion and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the evolution of the show is that really is, to me, one of the most interesting aspects of it. I mean, I guess Lost was similar and they, you know, each season had a flavor.
Yeah.
But it was a flavor. With Lost, it really felt like an evolution. Like, season one, it was almost like X-Files, but with less frustration.
Yeah.
like, you know, the stories had endings.
Yeah, it's true.
And the male lead emoted. That was nice, too. You weren't always wondering, is this guy a robot? And is that the twist? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, just the quality of the writing. And, again, the writing and the acting, whether you realize it or not, take you above and beyond. You know, like, the stories themselves, yeah, they were episodic and stuff was going on, but, like, those actors just really sell it. They really provide, you know, and then when stuff starts to gel at the end of that first season with the audience figuring out that Peter's not from our universe, but Peter doesn't know it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That was just, you know, a friend of mine who's a screenwriter now, at the time, he was like, this is fire, man. This is it. This is really great stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it really was and is.
Yeah, agreed. Do you know she's Australian?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I discovered this at Dallas Comic Con a couple weeks ago.
And John Noble is too, I think.
Uh huh. Yeah, they're both from Middle Earth. Well, I guess
technically
New Zealand. Technically,
yeah, yeah.
They're from the West.
Yeah.
Where else?
Yeah, pretty crazy. Yeah, and I hope we get to see more of them. I know John Noble's kind of been all over the place, and he was Denethor in Lord of the Rings and that sort of thing, but I hope to see Anna Torv do more cool stuff like that. I haven't seen her in anything lately, but
either. That's a damn shame.
Yeah.
She is super talented.
She is. I'm trying to pull up her her listing here in IMDb to see if she's got anything on the on the plate coming up soon. Doesn't looks like it yet.
Someone knocked her up. That's what that always is.
Well, she did have a kid. Looks like so she was a voice actress in this game for the PS3 called Heavenly Sword, and that game kind of flopped a long time ago. But it looks like she's doing voiceover work for a video, like a direct to video version of some story related to Heavenly Sword. But that's all that's in her
that seems IMDb like a
docket since then, since Fringe.
Yeah, that's a bit of a waste.
Well, hopefully
I like a good voice actress as much as the next guy, but
yeah, I hope she finds something on TV or in film again. That would be really cool.
I mean, can't John Hamm sleep with her on Mad Men at least? I mean, he's got at least one more season. That's at least what, 4 more girlfriends?
I'm one episode behind, I think, of Mad Men, but man, that show continues.
Oh, the last one you saw was that fucked up drug one, then.
Yes.
That episode was terrible.
Oh, it was so bizarre. They always want to have this one episode where things just go really freaking crazy somehow, and it just keeps getting crazier and crazier.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell the point of that was. It was very weird and upsetting, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he was obsessed with trying to get the doctor's wife, to like him again. But there was all those other, that imagery and stuff. I guess the flashbacks to his childhood were...
Yeah, it's where he was getting hand jobs.
Yeah, and those were
coherent.
Don't really
know what that was supposed to be about.
I kind of think that stuff continues to inform the way he views women and the kind of relationships that he has. Yeah. As, growing up in a whorehouse has got to really fuck you up something serious as far as, there's like the mother figure that's hit,
beats him with a spoon.
But like then the prostitute who is like very motherly to him and treats him better than his mother does. Like
I'll say.
When she's done, she gives him, she screws him basically. It's like, how's the kid supposed to feel about that when someone who's supposed to be, or who is ostensibly supposed to be nurturing you, all of a sudden does something like that? Like, what does that do to your psyche, to your relationships with sex and with women? That's got to totally mess you up. And, hey, Dawn is really messed up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this much. The next episode is quite good.
Cool.
Yeah, they're right back in the saddle.
Cool. Yeah, I like the stuff I like the most about Mad Men, as fascinating as some of that Dawn stuff is and some of the other character stories are, I like the business wheelings and dealings and the stuff going on with the ad agency, so I hopefully they'll get to see more of that next episode.
Yeah. I wonder if this merger storyline portends some actors being cut.
Yeah, good question. I don't know.
I mean, with AMC, apparently that's always a worry.
Yeah.
No, too expensive.
I mean, the cast of characters is pretty big, so...
Yeah.
They already fired that guy in either the episode I saw or the episode before that where Roger Sterling just fires him again.
That was a great scene.
You know, Roger is such a dick, but that was funny.
But he's so good at it. It's
yeah. Yeah.
I was just like, I would love to get one of these zingers in, not five in a row. Go to hell. You just stole my last line.
This is great.
All right, before I let you go, one last question.
Sure.
Have you seen Trek 12 or Trek Volume 2, Number 2?
Yes, Star Trek Into Darkness, yes.
Oh, excellent. What'd you think?
I thought it was great. I really liked the take on Khan. It was definitely not what – if you're a hardcore classic Star Trek person, it certainly, throws a bunch of stuff out the window. But I like what they developed. I thought it was a unique take. Benedict Cumberbatch I love from Sherlock, so I thought he did a great job.
Oh, dude, I have not watched Sherlock, but I am totally in love with this guy's voice.
Oh, dude, you gotta watch that freaking show. It's amazing.
Yeah, Sid's been telling me that too. It's just there's just so much good TV. I mean, I'm trying to get to.
Oh, sure. I understand what you mean.
Yeah, it's first world problems and all, but
yeah. And I was remarking on my way out of the theater that they keep giving all of the the classic Kirk stuff to Spock and vice versa. It's like Spock has the Khan thing, and then Kirk has the death scene, but Spock gets to beat the crap out of Khan, and Khan survives rather than, you know, dying at the end, which I thought was interesting.
I was really impressed with how they put that together. Like, they had a ton of really fun little Easter eggs in there for people that, you know, are immersed in Trek, like a lot of its fans are.
Yeah.
But if they structured it to where if you didn't know any of that shit, you could still enjoy the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was great. I thought it was better than the Star Trek that came before this one.
The 2009. I thought the 09 one I liked okay. It didn't blow me away.
Yeah, it was more action and popcorn and just kind of fast paced. This one, you know, is kind of built things a little more slowly, and there's definitely a more intriguing villain, I think. I think the villain really does a lot for the Star Trek.
Eric Bana did not do it for you, eh?
No, I mean, and I like Eric Bana as an actor, but yeah, it was just not the same. Like, there's a real... I guess that's always what they try to do in Star Trek. I read some criticisms of Trek and other places in reference to this movie, is they got to find a foil for Kirk every time. That's the way they kind of piece these things together. But Khan is the best foil they've ever had for Kirk, and they've done it again, you know, and not just for Kirk, but he was a good foil for Spock too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of my favorite scenes from the film is the one where they're having that standoff and it ends with, you know, like, shall we begin?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just great.
I love that voice.
Man.
I've been doing it all the time, man. I'm trying to affect it. Yeah. He was really good. I still bitter Banderas wasn't in that role, but
yeah, I mean,
I think I'll survive.
You know, I guess there is some people were saying, like, well, you know, it's these people are supposed to be the same, just younger versions of the same characters, and there's not really a resemblance when you have Khan with a British accent all of a sudden instead of a sort of Spanish one. But whatever. I mean, reimagine it all you want. At this point, I mean, although I did like that they were consistent and Spock was smart, and he's like, wait a minute, there's a future version of me that's already done this stuff with this asshole. Let me call him up in the middle of the movie and see what he did. I thought that was really cool.
I actually was kind of disappointed they put that in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm ready for them to, like, to divest from the old stuff.
Okay.
Even though this one was essentially a remake, an excellent and fun one. But I'm really excited for the next one, even though it looks like I would assume Abrams is not going to be involved.
Yeah, I think he's done maybe just in a producer role for the next one, but I think he's done with those. He's moving on to Wars now instead of Trek.
I think that'll be okay too, because as long as his guys continue to write them, they'll bring his touch to it. So I think it's probably in good hands.
Yeah, I mean, look at Fringe. You know, tying it back to what we were just talking about, like J.J. Abrams didn't really have much of a role in Fringe beyond like the first season, and they took it to great places. So hopefully, the same will be the true of Trek.
Yeah, as long as Giacchino and. His writers are show running. I think they'll be just fine.
Oh yeah, and by the way, I love the warp like CG that they use in this one. Oh man, that gave me goosebumps every time. I don't know, I just really love that.
Yeah, there was a lot to like in that. Although, like Iron Man 3, and you know, President Obama, it was pretty bipolar response to this thing. I loved it or hated it.
I guess I don't know.
I could see not liking it, but hating it seems strong.
Yeah, it wasn't poorly done. It wasn't like a B-level, B-grade movie. It was really well done. Say what you want about the way that the characters evolved or the lack of involvement of some of the other characters like Chekhov or whatever, but those are minor concerns. I mean, the movie was well done.
Yeah, I thought so. I wonder if part of the reason I enjoyed it so much is because I thought it looked bad from the trailers. I was like, well, there's a lot of explosions. I don't know what the hell is actually going on in this movie, though. I guess I'll go watch it.
I read that Abrams refilmed like that scene where they're launching out of the Enterprise onto the Vengeance or whatever it's called through the trash thing. Like they refilmed that for people who were previewing the movie before it came out. So that they called him Harrison instead of Khan, just to keep the ruse up all the way up until release day, that he was Khan.
Yeah, and that probably contributed to those trailers I'm complaining about. They really were trying to keep that under wraps.
Yep, they were super paranoid about that.
It probably wouldn't work better if they hadn't initially tried to cast Benicio del Toro in the role.
True.
It's like, really?
Really? Yeah. I think we know what's going on.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't have a problem with the Ming derivative. I mean, even if you want to call it a remake, I think it was a pretty good remake.
Yeah, and they took it into a slightly different directions, which I really liked.
Yeah. Plus, Alice even her underwear. I mean, I just wanted to work that in there. I feel like I'd be remiss if I did not. It also left me wanting more.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
same
like
here.
Now the 5-year mission's going to start. It looks like we might get something that might be wholly new, which would be welcome.
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Cool.
It feels good. And I know you're trying to get to bed. We're recording this late, as you can probably tell, after Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I will hang my head and then go to bed. My team lost.
I think we're going to get at least 2 more games of really good basketball.
Yeah,
I still think that the Heat have got to be the favorites in this thing.
Yeah, I think they'll come back. They'll fire back strong next game.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
And as an impartial observer, I'm kind of liking it because I really was concerned they were just going to steamroll through everybody.
Yeah, it makes things more interesting for sure. And at the end of the day, I think that'll make this whole playoffs season, the playoffs for the season, more enjoyable for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, Westbrook's ankle injury helped that, but.
Yeah, the OKC man.
Andrew Manning up here has been welcome as well.
Yeah.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the Full of Sound and Fury podcast. This one is not 7 hours long for a change, so you're welcome. I am Cyrus Mortizavi. I draw comics. I should do a bunch of shit on the web now. I dare you not to find me, but my main hub site is fanbasecomics.com. With me tonight via Skype is Ariel Rodriguez.
What up?
Yeah. Check him out also on Kung Fu Conversations.
Yeah, I'm on Kung Fu Conversations. Find us on iTunes or go to austinkungfuacademy.com/blog. We've got our episodes up there.
It is phenomenal. They have an episode about weapons. I'm very excited to listen to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's a podcast where we talk about learning in the martial arts. So we're not teaching you martial arts there. We're talking about what's interesting and about learning and teaching the martial arts. So it's a little bit of a different take. It's more conversational. It should be fun.
Hopefully, Key will listen to that and learn the difference between karate and kung fu.
He could do that.
I have to mention at least I've said.
Yeah.
All right, we're out. All right. This has been a Rising In production. Copyright 2013.